My guest at this time is David Barton. He's the founder and president of Wall Builders. He is also the author of The Jefferson Lies, Exposing the Myths You've Always Believed About Thomas Jefferson. It's now available in paperback. David joins us now to discuss where Jefferson would stand in the current battle over religious freedom and to update us on the controversy surrounding his book. And David, thanks very much for being with us.
My pleasure. Thanks for having me.
Well, one of the big debates, of course, that's erupted in our nation, across the nation, really, over the past couple of years, particularly as the courts have sided more and more, and ultimately the Supreme Court sided with the idea of same-sex marriage, is where freedom of conscience, freedom of religion fits in. We see these battles where same-sex couples, for example, want bakers to provide a cake for their service, or florists, or photographers, or the Kim Davis story, of course, in Kentucky. Thomas Jefferson is known, of course, for the letter to the Danbury Baptist, talking about the separation of church and state. At the same time, one of the things he was most proud of was authoring the Statute of Virginia Religious Freedom. So to talk about where he'd come down in this debate.
He'd come down very clearly. I mean, he is so clear that the number one inalienable right government is to protect is the right of conscience. I mean, that is something he repeats over and over. He said it's inconsistent with our constitutional laws to force tender consciences. He has a number of quotes that are very forceful in consciences. In his day, there was a lot of folks who disagreed with where they were on a number of things. Quakers, not the least of which. Quaker opposed the American Revolution, independence, etc., and they still went out of their way to protect Quakers, even though they were opponents in the Revolution. So Jefferson has a long record of that, and the record really goes back to the separation of church and state letter. And it's interesting that prior to 1947, the Supreme Court would quote all of that letter, large segments of it. After 1947, they've never quoted more than eight words out of that letter. And when you look at the full letter, which is about three paragraphs long, about 200 words, it's very simple, and it goes to his Virginia Statute of Religious Liberty that you mentioned, and that is what we've had in Europe and Great Britain is a state-established denomination that tells us what we have to be and it persecutes everyone that doesn't agree and believe with the state. And so in those situations, you had no religious toleration, you had no freedom of conscience, and you did have coercion. Those three things were characteristic. So when it appeared that in Connecticut, that Connecticut might establish a state denomination, the Baptist there wrote to Jefferson, said, this is not a good deal. We're afraid we're going to lose our religious liberty. And by the way, in the First Amendment, it actually talks about religious liberty, and that shouldn't be in a government document because government has no say over religion. And that's when Jefferson wrote him back and said, look, separation of church and state, that means the government's never going to get involved in stopping religious activities or beliefs. So as you look at Jefferson after that, you'll find, and by the way, this I have to back up sequence. The Virginia Statute of Religious Liberty that he did was because Virginia had one state-established denomination, the Anglican denomination. And he watched his friends who were Presbyterians and Quakers and Baptists and Methodists, he watched them get fined, thrown in jail, beat, sometimes killed, because the state-established denomination told them what they had to believe and how they had to practice their faith. So he goes into court for them to fight for that, fight for other denominations. That's what the Virginia Statute does, is it disestablishes the Anglican Church, puts everybody on the equal footing. Then when he becomes president, that continues to be his mantra. But the concept of coercion, no way. It's interesting that Jefferson in office was not even close to a secularist. He's the guy who helped facilitate church services starting every Sunday in the U.S. Capitol. He went there as vice president, 8 years as president. He invited preachers to preach at the Capitol. By 1854, the largest church in the United States was the one that Jefferson helped facilitate in the U.S. Capitol. That doesn't look like separation today. He funds to pay for missionaries to go evangelize the Indians and teach them gospel. I just go through what Jefferson did. And there's nothing there that looks like secularism, but what is there is we're going to promote religious expression, and everybody gets free choice of how they want to do it. So there's no coercion. We will protect religious conscience, and we're going to have religious toleration. So where we are today, Jefferson would be the first guy popping up on the other side saying what we're doing is wrong.
We're talking with David Barton. The book is The Jefferson Lies, Exposing the Myths You've Always Believed About Thomas Jefferson. Obviously, it's a little bit different, the type of religious freedom issues he was dealing with when he wrote the Statute of Religious Freedom for Virginia than what we're dealing with now. There's no specific church trying to force compliance among the people, and the government back then was not doing what the government is now. So Obviously, it's always dangerous to ask what someone would do 200 years after they died nearly. But in terms of addressing the way things are right now, how do you think he or how do you think the founders in general would have looked at this?
Well, I think you have to go back to something the court has recognized. As we got into conscience objector cases in the 1960s in the Supreme Court said, look, religion is whatever you believe so strongly that it affects the way you behave. And so because of that, the court since then has acknowledged a number of non-traditional religions, including a number of religions that have no belief in God whatsoever. And that's why if you're an atheist group, you can get the same nonprofit church tax exemption that's available to churches. So the recognition of the court is that if you hold a particular belief that guides the way you behave, that can be considered your religion. Well, on this particular issue, there's no question the government has a state-established religion on things like homosexual marriage, on things like abortion, etc., because it does not allow any kind of religious toleration for beliefs other than its own. And so, therefore, you do have bakers being fined $135,000. You do have Jack Phillips in Colorado facing jail. You do have the Odd Guards with their house taken away from them in Iowa. You have all this because you're not conforming to what the government says you have to believe about this religious issue, and your religious beliefs have no bearing. What has always been cool in America, and I've been involved in 7 cases of the U.S. Supreme Court, is I am a huge pro-America guy. I've got 2 kids serving in the Army, but I will go to the mat for Jehovah's Witnesses to not have to say under God in the Pledge of Allegiance or to say the Pledge of Allegiance at all because they don't believe you pledge anything other than God. And I will go to the mat for Christian Scientists to not have to vaccinate their kids even though my kids have to do that when they go to school. I'll do the same for Amish who say, hey, our Bible teaches us we only go through 8 years of school, not 12. We can't do compulsory education. I may disagree with every one of those, but I will go to the mat to fight for their belief to believe something differently if they believe that's what God told them to do. And so in that sense, all the things you raised earlier are because people believe God told me I can't support homosexual wedding. I can't participate in abortions. I can't whatever. And their position, Jefferson and the others, would have been, well, if God told you that, we're not going to force you to go against your conscience. I mean, we'll protect your conscience. And so in that sense, the government does have now a state-established religious belief on these religious areas of marriage and life and other things. And so they are coercing people into their belief or punishing them if they're not. So in many ways, it is very akin to what Jefferson faced in his day. It's just a different set of beliefs that are being pushed now.
Again, the book is The Jefferson Lies. And David, some of our listeners may know, some may not, that your first hardcover publishing of this book engendered some controversy back in 2012. In fact, the publisher ultimately suspended publishing for a time due to criticisms that your portrayal of Jefferson was historically questionable. And in fact, a lot of the criticism came from other conservatives. Namely, they say that your portrayal of Jefferson as more conventional of a Christian than history has generally portrayed him to be was inaccurate. What do you want to say to those who still wonder where the facts lie on this story?
Well, I'm glad you asked that because that is not what the book said, and that's thing that was made very clear in a long chapter. We showed that Jefferson was not in any way, shape, fashion, or form an Orthodox Christian. He questioned the divinity. He questioned the inspiration of the scriptures, etc. But what we showed was he was never anti-Christian, anti-Jesus, or anti-religion. And so, they were called conservatives by media. That's really questionable. The places, the sites for which they wrote, and the groups that they regularly attack are all conservative Christian groups. So them being portrayed as conservatives is what they portrayed themselves at, but we knew that was coming. I told the publisher ahead of time, these guys are writing, here's what they're going to do, here's what they're going to come after, and they did, and knowing that they would do that, I had provided the publisher with 2 boxes of documentation of every claim we had in the book, and the publisher never opened the documentation at all, never even called me. They just said, we don't want the controversy, we're bailing. And so at that point, it gave the other guys the freedom to say, oh, look, they pulled it because of inaccuracies, and so that's out there. So this time it's back out, and this time we got all sorts of academic endorsements and presidents at universities and history profs and everybody else saying, yeah, this is right. And the other thing is we put the footnotes out there for everybody to see. In our case, we're very blessed. I now have about 100,000 documents from before 1812. So I have the original documents of Jefferson and Adams and Washington and these guys. I have the documents where in 1803 Jefferson approved a treaty to send missionaries to the Kiskaskia Indians and gave federal funds to build them a church. And this is all the stuff that's saying, no, Jefferson was a secularist. Well, then what do you do with all these original documents I have? So this time back out, the narrative has significantly changed. They had a free shot last time at it, and, you know, again, this was all known by the publisher before it went, and we told them what was going to happen. Because when you start attacking, I mean, when a lot of these guys, academics, support the secularization of church and state, and we say, hey, you're citing Jefferson on that. You can't do that. Jefferson's not the guy who secularized this. I mean, he's the guy who put religious activities in so many public places. Then what you have to do is go after the person who makes Jefferson look different from what they portray him as. And, you know, this has been gone on for 200 years. It's gone on for 2,000 years, quite frankly, that you start attacking the messenger rather than the message. And that's what happened. So it's back out this time, even more footnotes, lots more brand-new Jefferson stuff from original documents that have not been out there for a while. The critics will continue to clamor because where I want society to go toward the area of protecting conscience, et cetera, is not necessarily where they want it to go.
In addition to obviously wanting to clear the record for your own integrity and the integrity of your work as well, what is most important to you about making sure the record is straight about Jefferson?
Well, Jefferson, interestingly enough, Jefferson is the go-to guy on public policy today. And if I can take Jefferson away from them, policy changes. There has been, you know, I mentioned I've been involved in all these cases, the Supreme Court, federal courts, state courts as well. Since 1947, when the court took Jefferson's letter and stopped using it and just used eight words, a wall of separation between church and state, since that point in time, there have been 4,000 cases go to the courts on the First Amendment religious expression. All 4,000 have quoted Jefferson, but only 3,000 have actually quoted the First Amendment. So Jefferson is quoted as an authority more often than the Constitution is on what you can and can't do with religious expressions. And so as the courts do not quote Jefferson's full letter or his activities, they just use him as authority. Hey, Jefferson said there's a wall of separation, so we can't let a kid say God at graduation. And Jefferson would say, what? Not in my name. So it really becomes important for Jefferson to be restored to his original position. Now, if we want to look at it and say, you know, I really don't care what Jefferson said. Here's what we want today. We want a secular society. That's fine. But don't invoke Jefferson into this. And one of the really, I guess, funny but also tragic things was in one of the Supreme Court cases we were involved with, it was whether there could be invocations and benedictions at a junior high graduation. And so in our part of the court, we went back to the writings of the Founding Fathers, and we showed that public schools were started in America in 1647, the first public school law. Public schools are 120 years old at the time of the Founding Fathers, and we gave them signers of the Constitution, Founding Fathers who actually prayed graduation prayers in their day for public schools. They even gave sermons at public school graduations. And so our point to the court was, look, there's nothing historically that requires hostility towards saying an invocation at a public graduation. And so we lost the case 5-4, but one of the justices wrote an entire concurring opinion on what we presented. And that justice who voted against us, he said, well, we see here the Founding Fathers not only condoned school prayer, they advocated it, they even participated in it. And that justice said that proves one of two things about the founders. It proves either that they were complete hypocrites because they knew it was wrong to pray in public and they did it anyway, or number two, it just shows the Founding Fathers didn't understand the Constitution. He goes, really? So what happens is the court bases its policy on its view of history, whatever that view is. And if you get history wrong, you get bad policies, and that's what we've had for a while. Now, if we want to be honest and say, don't care about history, don't care about policies, we just don't want kids saying God at graduation, that's great. But so far, every First Amendment case that looks at that invokes Jefferson as the basis of saying kids can't say God or they can't pray over their lunch at school, kindergartner in St. Louis, and et cetera. I mean, we've had over 1,800 of these cases in the last several years where kids simply can't express their faith publicly. Jefferson would never support that.
David, unfortunately, our time is up. We'll have to leave it there. Thank you, sir, very much for your time today.
My pleasure. Thanks for having me.
David, bye-bye. David Barton is the author of The Jefferson Lies, Exposing the Myths You've Always Believed About Thomas Jefferson. He's also the founder and president of Wall Builders, which describes itself as an organization dedicated to presenting America's forgotten history and heroes with an emphasis on the moral, religious, and constitutional foundation on which America was built. I'm Greg Corumbus, reporting for Radio America.